Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today, we're visiting with Hugh Taylor, the executive editor of the Journal of Cyber Policy. He's been working in the enterprise technology and cybersecurity fields for over two decades. As an entrepreneur and analyst and author, Hugh Taylor of the Journal of Cyber Policy uses his investigative and storytelling skills to examine the impact of the digital world on our society with a book authored a few years back that was uncannily accurate in its prediction of the use of digital to shape political and community opinions. Hugh would like to discuss today the forces at work to both shape and shift our beliefs and where he feels our consumer community is headed over the next 5 years. And Mr. Taylor, thanks for joining us here today.
Yes, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
And certainly our pleasure, and thanks for your time. So, Hugh, what is your background, and why do you feel it's important to be a journalist and an advocate for cybersecurity awareness? Let's start there.
Absolutely. Well, my background is a little bit odd for someone who works in the enterprise technology and cybersecurity fields. It is something of a second career for me. I was originally working in primetime television on the ABC and CBS movie of the week and that sort of thing in the 1990s. And that may seem like a strange on-ramp to be working in tech, but it actually has helped me in certain ways. I do a lot of my work involves marketing and communication. So knowing how to tell stories and understanding what kind of stories will grab people is useful in understanding how the technology industry functions, but it's also a good grounding in how influencers can affect how reality is perceived, which is really part of the cybersecurity story, certainly in the United States right now. And it may seem remote, but many of the cyber attacks that are happening are geared towards affecting public perception of events. And I would one of the reasons I say this is that I would include, manipulation of a social media platform like Twitter or Facebook using automated software robots, whatever, is a form of a cyber attack. They're hacking the system, basically, to affect public opinion. So having a background in entertainment and media has helped me, I'd like to think, get a good understanding of what's going on. More broadly, so starting about 20 years ago, I switched into the technology field. And since then, I've been working with a combination of really big companies and really small companies. I've worked at Silicon Valley venture-backed startups in technology and security. I've worked at Microsoft and IBM. And as a freelance freelancer for the last 10 years, I've worked with almost everybody in the industry, from SAP and Oracle and Intel and Google, on almost any kind of enterprise technology that you can think of, and almost any cybersecurity situation that you can imagine. And I think what this has given me, although I'm not a practitioner, I'm not a coder or a cybersecurity analyst, but having been in and around big tech companies and their big clients for many, many years, I've gotten, I'd like to think, a strong sense of realism about how technology actually works in a company or in the government and how it doesn't work. And I've gotten a good sense of what can go wrong. And that's what's led me to write my recent book, Digital Downfall, for example. It's sort of the book is an extended worry session, basically, about what might go wrong in the United States with foreign cyber threats and that sort of thing.
Well, I certainly think it's timely to have this in place, and really appreciate your hitting some of the highlights in your background. It is certainly unique from your angle, no doubt about that. Now, how should corporations deal with the increasing cyber threats that are out there?
So, yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And just to set the context, the cyber threat environment is definitely heating up. It's not just your imagination. I mean, the headlines tell one side of the story. I mean, you have these incredibly brazen and high-impact cyber attacks, like the ransomware attack that shut down the Colonial gasoline pipeline, which, as I reported in my blog, that also shut off fuel deliveries to the U.S. Air Force. So it shows how a ransomware attack, which is technically a crime, but it's probably either directly or indirectly coming from a foreign government, can affect our military. But just in that context alone, ransomware attacks are up over 10,000% by the end of 2020, according to one report. And this year, almost three-quarters of organizations have suffered a data breach due to phishing attacks. So things are really heating up. Companies are losing a lot of money. They're facing reputational damage. And at the minimum, these things are a huge distraction from the real business of making money. You know, and cybersecurity is a cost center. You know, it's very expensive, but it's necessary. So what can corporations do about this? I think there's a combination of things. I mean, you've got to do the basics. And if you're in the business, you'll find it's shocking that a lot of really, really serious cyber attacks are the result of very simple failures in cybersecurity, like people not updating software properly. You know, just those updates that we all say, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. If you don't do those, your system is exposed and you can get attacked. But a more higher level, if you talk to the really senior people, you know, at the big companies like Deloitte and Pricewaterhouse, the people who really advise major corporations on this, they're talking about managing risk in across multiple levels of a business. And so what the best practices now are to have cybersecurity in sort of overlapping zones. Like, you have to do your basic stuff. Like, you have to encrypt your data and manage your access controls, and so the wrong people don't get the access to stuff. You have to handle your patching of systems. Just basic, that's really important. But then you also need to add in what's called threat intelligence, which is having people or sometimes an external company that really just sits there all day and watches for the next attack and where it's coming from. And then on the other side of that, you need incident response. And this is really critical. Companies have to know what to do and not, you know, when there's a cyber incident, not go, gee, what should we do now? They have to have planned and practiced the response process. And in more sophisticated companies now actually have software that just has a lot of automation to make those responses go faster. And another thing that's important is to recognize the overlap between security, compliance, and privacy. They're almost really the same thing. And so those areas should work together, because solving a compliance problem often solves a security problem, and becoming more secure often makes you more compliant and that kind of thing. And then you need cyber insurance. That's really a must-have at this point. And finally, you need an incident response plan for the business, because what a lot of companies are learning the hard way is that a cybersecurity incident is a huge public relations and brand management crisis if it's not handled the right way. And so, you know, you need to have a crisis PR firm on retainer. You have to have you need a press release written announcing your cyber breach before it happens. You know, don't wait till you're like, gee, what should we say now? You should think about that now, and then you'll be glad you did. So that's how companies can get ready for this and deal with it.
Certainly some awesome information. Really appreciate your thorough feedback there as well. Much appreciated. Now, also, at what point is it reasonable to say it shouldn't be up to a corporation to defend itself against world-class foreign intelligence services? How would you respond to that kind of mindset?
So this is an issue that I explore in the book, and it comes up in a number of dialogues in the industry, which is that, you know, even the biggest companies in the world are no match for the geopolitical adversaries that the United States is up against, you know. And primarily when you're talking about geopolitical, so-called state actors, you're talking about Russia, China, and Iran. Those are the three major ones. And there's a lot of other countries whose governments have an interest in disrupting the United States, spying on us, stealing our intellectual property, potentially, you know, affecting our military operations. And these are world-class entities. And, you know, just as a sort of a reference point, you know, the congressional investigation at the 2016 election said that a Russian intelligence group of about 300 people managed to influence the election of 2016. Now, if that's what 300 people can do, bear in mind that Russia has at least 15,000 operatives in this unit. And according to one source, that number is very low. The real number is unknown. It's classified. But they have thousands of world-class hackers ready to shut the United States down and disrupt our businesses. So what can you do? It's almost impossible for a corporation to defend itself against this. Now, I will tell you, this is kind of a funny thing. I can't disclose the name of this company, but one of the biggest corporations in America actually has its own so-called black ops team. They've gone out and hired people who used to work for the CIA and the NSA, and they're there. If you mess with this company, they will mess with you. they'll hack you back. So, but this is only available to the highest levels, and even they can't really defend themselves. So, you know, what a lot of companies are saying is it's time for the government to do more or some kind of policy to defend, because you wouldn't say to, you know, General Motors, you know, you need to install anti-aircraft missiles in case, you know, a Russian jet drops a bomb on you. That's not their responsibility. But what they are saying, basically, if a Russian intelligence service attacks you, you're kind of on your own. And that doesn't seem fair to me. So I think it's time. The question is, at what point can you say? It's now. Now is the time that American companies need more help in defending themselves.
I totally agree. I'm sure the listeners do as well, and you made some solid points to back that up as well. Today we're joined by Mr. Hugh Taylor, the executive editor of the Journal of Cyber Policy. He's been working in the enterprise technology and cybersecurity fields for over two decades. He's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, continuing on, can the government do more to protect American companies from foreign cyber threats?
Well, I think the government can do more, and I think it's important to say the government is trying to do stuff. It's not fair to say they aren't doing anything. There's a lot of legislation. There's policies coming. The problem is that government just can't move very quickly, and you know, it's complicated to change the way things are done at big government agencies and so forth. But I think my suggestion is that we need to reframe the issue. And one aspect of this is to recognize that the cyber boundary of the United States, or the network, the computer networks of the United States, represent an international boundary. And this is not the way most of the world looks at it, because the origin of the internet was for sharing information globally, and that's been marvelous for many, many people and businesses, that you can, you know, click on a link and see a museum in Africa effortlessly or whatever. But it's terrible for security. And I think that it would be helpful if we looked at if a packet of information is traveling from China to California, it's crossing an international boundary, just as if an aircraft or a naval vessel from China was crossing an international boundary into the United States, or even a person coming off a plane or something. There's an entity crossing a boundary, and it should be detected, intercepted, stopped, or at least examined for what it is. Instead, we have this extraordinary situation where foreign governments can set up attack servers using American cloud services and then just sit there and attack us from our own territory. And sometimes we don't even know until later. And to me, that's not a good approach to national security. It's bad for the American businesses, because they're just sitting ducks. And I think that issue needs to be explored. Now, there's a countervailing opinion that we shouldn't close ourselves off from the world and so forth. But I believe it's not an accident that Russia and China have both set up these so-called national firewalls. It's much more difficult to enter a network from abroad in those countries. Because they know better. They know that people want, because they're doing it to us. They don't want people doing to them what they do to us. So they've erected so-called national firewalls. And I think it would be wise for the U.S. to look into that sort of thing. And another area is that the government could set more standards for security in terms of, and this has been proposed, by the way, by a very interesting report called the Solarium Report on Cybersecurity, which suggested that the government either establish or help establish a sort of underwriter laboratory type of entity to certify technology for its level of security. This is something that's been very weak. And it would be great if you, when you bought like a router or something, that it comes with like a sticker that says this has been checked for security, because unfortunately we buy a lot of technology, by the way, most of which is made in China, which comes with malware embedded in it already at the factory. And so it, things like that need to be changed. But, you know, it's a question of intent. I mean, the Biden administration has gotten fairly good marks for trying, you know. I mean, I think there's a lot of very smart people working on this problem, but I think they need to work a little bit differently if they really want to solve it.
Now, here's a question for you. Are there any business opportunities available in this current escalating cyber threat environment? I think there would be.
For sure. You know, it's, cybersecurity is a very big business. It's on the track to go over $200 billion this year. It employs over 300,000 people. It's a very big business. There's a lot of opportunities, mainly if you can solve the biggest problem in the whole industry, which is there are just not enough people. There are not enough trained cybersecurity people to go around. And that's a good way. If you have college-age kids, push them into cybersecurity jobs. You'll be glad anyway. But to be serious, there any way that you can automate or save time in cybersecurity management is very auspicious for the business. And what's happening on the big picture is that there's a lot of startups, a lot of venture money going into cybersecurity, and people are creating these tools that do things that, you know, integrate and automate cybersecurity incident response or threat detection, and then they get bought up by the big players like Cisco and Microsoft or whatever, because they want these tools in their portfolios. So it's a real booming time, and I kind of wish it wasn't that way, because I wish we didn't have this underlying trouble. But in the meantime, there's definitely money to be made in being part of the solution, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, certainly understand that. Mr. Taylor, really appreciate your visit with us here today, the thorough coverage on cybersecurity, and your input and feedback, so appreciated. Before you go, in conclusion, any closing thoughts, a final word, or anything else you'd like to add as we do conclude today?
I think this issue is going to be with us for quite a while, and I'm just hoping that we don't have a really problematic situation. I mean, over the last few months, we've seen a lot of attacks on healthcare operations and government operations and stuff, and I feel there's the potential, unfortunately, for like a very serious crisis if you have what I would call these sort of interlocking attacks, where you have a city like where the police and fire in the hospital and nothing's working because they've all been hacked, and then you have disinformation coming over, and then you have panic. You could have a very dangerous scenario, and it worries me. So I'm hoping that we can beef up our defenses before we get to that point.
Mr. Taylor, really appreciate those final words in conclusion, and again for your visit with us here today. I'm sure listeners want to know how they could get more information on the Journal of Cyber Policy. Where's the best place to get further details online?
Well, it's at journalofcyberpolicy.com. We'd love to have you come to the site. We've got interesting articles, book reviews, research reports, all kinds of stuff.
It certainly sounds like an awesome resource as well. Mr. Taylor, all the best. Thanks so much for what you do in the space and for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Okay, wonderful. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Hey, you're certainly more than welcome anytime. We've been speaking with Mr. Hugh Taylor, the executive editor of the Journal of Cyber Policy. He's been working in the enterprise technology and cybersecurity fields for over 20 years. And for all the details, visit journalofcyberpolicy.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.